We had a good number assembled this morning, a good number here tonight as well. The cold weather is still working against us, and many people are not able to get out in this weather, and we trust that all of you are using the proper judgment that you should be using as you're making those determinations. But it's so good to see you. So many of our friends north of here in Kentucky and Tennessee and other places had to cancel their services or reschedule them, and many of them are getting innovative in the ways that they can reach out to people who are not able to be there in person with them. Some stream their services live over the Internet so that you can see them as well as hear what's going on. Others pre-record lessons that can be shared then through Facebook and other means for their members to have some connection with that group during that time. So we're fortunate. We're very pleased here to have the technology that we have, the good people that work and to support that. And we're also fortunate to live in a time where we have so many different options of how we can continue to worship and be around God's people. But tonight I want us to talk about 10 ways that we can improve attitudes in the church. Now you think, all right, Brother Mike, 10 ways, all right? If I give you a minute away, that's 10 minutes, okay? So I'm not going to quite do a minute per way, but we've got 10 different points here. Each point has a passage with it. And so as we go through, we're just going to look at these passages, but keep in mind what we're doing here. Our purpose is to look at ways that we can be more encouraging and more helpful in our attitudes as a part of the church. Remember, we're all part, separate members, all part of one body. We all support each other. What we do, if one of us hurts, we all hurt with them. If one of us rejoices, we all rejoice with that person. All of those things come together. And so what part am I of the body? What am I contributing? Am I taking away more than I'm giving to the body of Christ? And what can I do to help instead of to hinder the cause of Christ in this specific place? And so that's the crux of what we're trying to accomplish for tonight. So let's go on to our first point here. And the first point comes from Romans chapter 3 and verse 23. Remember that you are not perfect and neither is anyone else in the church. How can I improve attitudes in the church? First thing, right off the bat, nobody's perfect. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. We know that. We know that verse. It's very familiar to us. But what does it really mean? It means that not a single one of us is perfect. We all make mistakes. We all make mistakes. Remember the quote this morning from Henry Ford? You know, failure is an opportunity to start again more intelligently. If you want to succeed faster, you have to increase your rate of failure. As we try new things, as we try things, as we grow, we're going to fail. But guess what? The more we do, the more we're going to accomplish in life as well. So no one is perfect. We all have our flaws and faults. And as we come together, we need to remember that. So when we have people that come that don't look like us or don't have the same background that we have, or they don't maybe do things exactly like we're accustomed to seeing them, either in our worship or in their activities, let's remember that all of us come with a background that is flawed. We're not perfect. So we look around, we see other people that are not perfect either. Now, from time to time, just like I did there, I started to say one word, then another word got in the way, and then they both kind of merged before they came out. Carla can tell you, I don't think I've ever had a perfect sermon where I said everything exactly the way I wanted to say it. I know, number one, I'm not perfect, and neither is anyone else in the church. We're all sinners. Let's go on to the point number two now. Revelation chapter 3 and verse 4. Let's go ahead and read that. Here in this sense, Jesus' words as he's talking to the church at Sardis, he's talking about what good things are there but what bad things also. These things, says he, I'm in verse 1 now, who has the seven spirits of God, the seven stars, I know your works, that you have a name, that you are alive, but you are dead, he says. Now that's bad. But in verse 4 he says, but you have a few names, even in Sardis, who have not defiled their garments, that they should walk with me in white, for they are worthy. This morning we talked about encouragement. We talked about being an encourager. What can you do? Have the eyes of an encourager. Look to see the positive and the good in people. I know that a lot of people do things that are bad things. Don't just focus on the bad things. Don't just focus on the irritating things. But focus on the fact that that person has an eternal spirit. That person deserves to be right with God. And you are a part of the equation. We are a part of the equation to help them be right with God. So in this sense, try looking for the sincere and dedicated spiritual members instead of picking on the worldly ones. And you'll seek what you can find. You might ask from time to time if you're traveling somewhere, well, I need a place to worship when I go to this town. What do you think of this particular congregation? And so you'll get an answer from somebody, oh, they're a really friendly group, or maybe somebody else will say, well, they're not very with it over there. That's their own personal perspective as it's going. There's a preacher's story that goes around from time to time about how our own personal attitudes make a difference in others around us. There was a preacher who was leaving one work and starting to go and wanting to investigate another work. And as he was investigating this other church that he had an interest in going to, he asked somebody, he went in and he said, hey, what kind of church is that church? And what he received in response was another question. The fellow asked the preacher, he says, well, what kind of church did you come from? And he said, well, what do you mean by that? And the fellow said, well, listen, said, if you were to tell me that you came from a very loving, spiritual-minded church, then I would tell you this church is just exactly like that. And if you were to tell me that you were coming from a backbiting, hateful, gossip-filled church that doesn't care for anything except selfishness, I'd tell you that this church is exactly like the one you came from. And the preacher said, I don't understand. And the fellow said, well, preacher, here's the deal. This church will be exactly what you think it's going to be because you're going to find what you're looking for. You're going to find good and you're going to find not so good always mingled in any assembly of people, whether if it's at the ball game, out at the civic club, or here in the assembly. So how do I improve? How do we improve our attitudes in the church? One thing is to look for those things that are good and solid and build upon those things. Revelation 3 and verse 4 supports that because here in Sardis, even a few had not defiled their garments. So let's not throw everything out all at once. Let's go over to 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. 1 Timothy 5, 1 and 2, Paul is talking to Timothy, of course, who is his younger protege, helping him along in so many different things. He's along with Titus, telling them to really focus on their work and not worry about their youth being a part of that. Verse 12 of the previous chapter, let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers, he says. 1 Timothy 5, verses 1 and 2 here, do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father, younger men as brothers, and older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters with all purity. Here's a great way of improving attitudes in the church. Treat everyone with respect, whether they're old or whether they're young, whether they're seasoned, well-seasoned in the church or whether they're new to the fellowship. Treat everyone with kindness and respect. Try to treat everyone as evenly as possible. It'll be amazing what kind of transformations we see in our lives as well as their lives when we treat everyone the same. I've known of some congregations in the past who have some difficulty with this as far as treating the older people or the younger people the same. Sometimes preferences are given to one group over another, and it's pretty prominent in some of the decisions that are made, and people take offense to that. But for any of us, let's look at this as a family, because that's who we are. We are a family. We're called out of the world. We're the ecclesia, the called out, the church. And as we come together as the body of Christ, we're here not because we were born physically into this group, but because we were spiritually born and then assembled here as this group of Christians, as Christ believers. As we've come together now, we are one body. And so let's treat one another with the respect that we should have. Number four on this list comes from Matthew chapter 5, and this was our reading that Jay did first few moments ago. Matthew chapter 5, verses 43 through 48. And this is difficult. The whole of the Sermon on the Mount is difficult for us to really digest. But try praying for your enemies. You know, we don't start there, do we? When we've got someone that's in opposition, when we've got somebody that's undermining, undercutting us, or scheming against us or whatever, we don't start with a prayer. We start with our defense. We start with a counterattack. We start with the things that come from our human side, our carnal side, not from our spiritual side, and that's not the way it should be. Jesus is talking here. Listen to what he says. He says, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Now, that's the common sense. That's the conventional wisdom thing. We hate our enemies. We love those who are with us. But Jesus says, I say to you, love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you. And pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. I wonder if Jesus were in our midst and if we went to Jesus like the man went to Jesus and said, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Or if we called upon Jesus, you be my judge here in this situation. I wonder if we went to Jesus with some great thing that was some injustice against us. And if we were there to plead out our case with Jesus, and what if he turns and says, what did I say on the Sermon on the Mount? Have you prayed for these people? Have you done what I asked you to do about these people that are against you? Well, no, Lord, I haven't. Well, then what are you doing here? You see, if you'll follow my words, Jesus is saying, these are the things that you need to have. You start to master these, and it's going to take care of a whole world of problems. How do I have a better attitude towards those that might not have the same opinion? How do we have a good attitude towards those who are not only of a different opinion, but fighting for what they want as opposed to what we want? You focus on this. Let's go on with this passage here and finish it out. That you may be sons of your Father in heaven, for he makes his sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the just and the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you have more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore, you shall be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. And you think of this and think, oh, well, we're a friendly group. We are a friendly group. And we, Carl and I, have had several visitors come down and to visit with us from other places, and they've all commented on how friendly you are to them as well. You're to be commended for that. Let me tell you very briefly about a church that I went to in Nashville years ago. I was being transferred with the company I was with, and my family was still down in Georgia. The short story version is, I went to this church on Sunday night. Had just been preaching Sunday morning in Georgia. Came straight there, drove in. I had my Bible. The sermon's still in my Bible. Got my suit on. I walk in, and not a soul says anything to me. I walk in the lobby. I see the tracts. I pick up a couple of tracts. I pick up their bulletin, copy of their budget. Not a person in that lobby. Six or eight people there. Not a soul said anything to me. I came in and picked out a section of seats about like this here, where there were some in the back and some in the front, and five or six pews there with nobody there. And I sat down purposely right there by myself. Nobody said a word to me. Throughout that entire worship service, I sang the songs. I bowed my head during the prayer. I did not worship, though, because my mind was affixed on the fact that here I am surrounded by Christians who don't care a thing about me. At the end of the service, we all stood, as is our tradition, after the closing prayer, and everybody started going out through the center aisle. I waited my turn then and went out with them. Not a single person said anything to me the entire time I was on that property. By the time I got to my car, well, you can imagine what's going through my head. These heathens up here in Nashville, I tell you what, somebody needs to come up here and straighten them out. Well, that's the most unfriendly church I've ever been a part of. Later on, I went back a few weeks later, and the same thing started happening again. Now, my attitude that second time was, surely this was a mistake. Surely they can't do that again. And once again, they start to ignore me as I come into their midst. Well, they're not a friendly church at all. But this time, I didn't just stand there and wait for them to ignore me. I interjected my hand into their group. I introduced myself. And from that point on, a magical effect happened. They were friendly. Listen, our attitudes have a great deal to do with the success and or failure of the church as a whole. Yeah, if I took on that view of that one church and forecast it and shined it on all churches, I would say all churches are unfriendly. And that's what a lot of our neighbors do. They have a bad experience, maybe with a Christian or maybe with a church service. And they tend to put that on everybody and say everybody now is like that. Our attitudes make a difference. Try praying for your enemies an antagonist, that's the people that are against you. It may not change them, but I love this, but it will do wonders for your attitude and for my attitude. Because if I'm praying for somebody, it's very difficult for me to maintain a level of anger because I am praying for that person. Okay? So how do we change and improve the attitudes in the church? One way that we do it is we focus on the words that God gives us in His Bible and we apply those basic things to our life. And you say, yes, but Brother Mike, that was a long time ago, and that's a simple thing, but things are different now. I don't think they are. I don't think they are. I think it comes back to the basics. And when we don't master the basics, we can't understand how to achieve the things that are more challenging in life. Well, let's go on to number 5 on this list. Number five on this list comes from Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 4. Matthew 7, verses 1 through 4. Here's our point, and then we'll read our passage. Instead of being critical of the problems of others, try being a part of the solution for them. All right? Instead of being critical, try being a part of the solution. You know this passage very well. Jesus says, judge not that you be not judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, a plank is in your eye? Now, you know the application of this. It's a simple thing, but we get caught up in it, don't we? We get caught up with looking at the problems instead of looking for the solutions, and looking for how we can point out things that are wrong in other people's lives instead of looking at how we can be a part of a solution to help them in their lives. It's like the old story, right? The lady is stuck at a red light there. Her engine is stalled. She's trying to get the engine crank, and she's going over and over. And back behind her is a man who is very impatient. And he's blowing on his horn, trying to get her to go and get out of his way. Finally, she leaves her car, walks back, knocks on the man's window. He rolls it down, and he says, can I help you? And she says, yeah. I tell you what, why don't you go up and try to start my car? I'll sit back here and yell at you and blow my horn. And we'll try it that way. Maybe that'll work better. The point is, we can all see problems. We can all see flaws. What are we going to do about solving something? For example, you might find that you walk up upon an argument going on. Maybe it's between a husband and wife or two children. Or maybe it's between somebody else. But you could tell it's not a very nice conversation. You've walked upon it now. Now you've seen it. Now what are you going to do? Well, you know, back in Galatians, Paul writes to the churches of Galatia. And in chapter 6, verse 1, we've been there before. He says, now, brethren, you who are spiritual, you need to look out for these situations. Because, he says, if a brother is overtaken in a trespass, or a fault, a sin, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness or meekness, considering yourself lest you also be tempted. What is Jesus telling us in Matthew 7, and what is Paul telling us in Galatians 6? He's saying you be a part of the solution, not be a part of the problem. You be a part of the solution and not be part of the problem. All right, let's go over to number 6 now. This comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13. You know that I like this passage. Because it talks about how temptation can be overcome. So our point is, never blame others for our own failures. Bad examples, discouraging attitudes, and even temptations can be overcome. Here in chapter 1 Corinthians 12, or 10 rather, in verse 13, no temptation has overtaken you except such as common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape so that you may be able to bear it. Now, to me, that's a very personal thing. God is not going to allow you or me to be tempted above the level that I'm able to withstand. In other words, we have a limit, and God protects us with that limit. He's not going to allow us to be tempted more than what we can stand. Temptation. But with the temptation will also give us a way to escape it. So you have the ability to withstand it, to stop it, but also if you feel weakness, God gives you a way of escape. Why then would some people never blame others for your own failures? Well, that's just the way I am. Well, I know I came across as hateful, but you know, that's just the way I've always been. Is that a good excuse? Is that a good excuse? I don't think so. Remember there, 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 11, Paul's talking about all these different people. And there's the homosexuals, the adulterers, and the murderers, and the others. And he says, and such were some of you. Past tense, you've been transformed. You've been changed. You're no longer like that before. Why? Because you put that old man to death. You put the old actions down, and you have taken up now new actions because you put on Christ. So don't blame others for your own failures. For the things that we have in our lives, we need to improve, to be better. And so if you say, well, that's just the way I am, well, that's a cop-out. That's not a very good way of having a good interaction with others. So that was number six. Let's go on to number seven then on our list. And for that, we'll go to 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. You can improve the church, your family, and the world by starting with yourself. And we're talking about some family issues here, but I want you to get the thought that Peter has throughout this passage about how much is going to depend on us. He says, now, wives, likewise be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives. I've told you before about a man that I baptized in his bathtub just a week before he died. He was a tank commander under Patton in the Second World War. He had nothing to do with church his whole life, but his wife was a faithful member of the church. And throughout all of those years, her faithfulness and her words were still there. And towards the end then, he did accept the conditions of salvation, and he did put on Christ before he died. But I'm here to tell you, the way that we live has such an impact on others around us, and it starts with us. Now, he goes on here in verse 2, because they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. Do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair and wearing gold or putting on fine apparel, but rather let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. You see, here we're talking about how you react to things. Here's a husband and wife, for example. The husband is not a member of the church. The wife is. And so they're going to have an argument, a disagreement from time to time. Peter says, now listen, wives, you be submissive to your own husbands, but also keep in mind the way that you interact with your husband may lead him to Christ without you even saying a word. And I used to read that when I was younger, thinking, how does that work? It's because of who we are, how we act, how we come across. It's because we're going back to the Sermon on the Mount, and we're loving those who are against us. We're going to bless those that curse us. We're going to treat people in the right way. Going on here in our text here, verse 5, for in this manner, in former times, holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters call you are, if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. But now in verse 7, he includes the husbands as well. Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers, get this, may not be hindered. How do I improve my life as a Christian? Well, I need to do what the will of God is. We talked about that in our teenage class this morning. How do I know what the will of God is? I've got to look at it in the Word of God. I've got to look in the Word and pull this out. And here in this verse 7, Peter is telling us that, guys, our prayers to God might be hindered, might be stopped because of the way that we treat our wives. And so he says, you be careful about this. Again, it comes back to our conduct. It comes back to our understanding of what God wants us to do. And much of that is wrapped up in our attitude. If I have an attitude of submission to God as a Christian, then I'm willing to accept what he says, and as difficult as I may find it, I'm willing to apply that to my life. I want to do this. I want to pray for my enemies. I want to bless those who curse me. I want to turn the other cheek. I want to receive something that's not so kind and give back something that is kind, because that's God's way. If I start with my attitude of submission to God, I'm going to find it easier for me to do this. So we can change attitudes. We can change not only in our family, but also in the church. But it starts with us. It starts with us in our attitude. All right, well, let's go back over into the book of Matthew now for number 8, Matthew chapter 22. Matthew chapter 22 and verse 39. 22 and verse 39. This is similar to a passage that we've just recently been on as well. Let's go to verse 37. Jesus answering a question about which is the great commandment in the law. He says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. Then he says, the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. If my attitude towards those around me isn't very pleasant, very good, I'm going to find it difficult to love somebody that I don't care to be around, that I don't love, or that I don't like. So looking for the good in every brother or sister makes it easier for us to love them more. There was a party that my wife and I went to years ago. We had just recently placed membership in this congregation. It was long before we had kids and before I was preaching. And one of the break the ice type of games that was there, well, wasn't really a break the ice game. It was just a game. We're supposed to go around the room and write something good that we knew about this person. We drew names. We were brand new. I didn't know. It was Phyllis, I think. Phyllis's name I drew. I couldn't think of anything. I didn't know anything good about Phyllis to say. I mean, I hadn't, you know, everybody else had been lifelong friends, and they're all, oh, I just love it the way that you volunteer all the time for the kids. And do. It came my time, and I'm like, I'm just blank. I couldn't draw off of anything. And they gave me a really hard time because I didn't know enough about the person to say something good. I could have said, I'm glad that you're alive. You know, I'm glad that you dress really well. You know, I don't know. I could have thought of a, but I was overcome with this thing of, I just don't know the person to know enough about them. But now that I'm older and I look around, I can meet somebody for one time and I can say something good about them because I'm looking for the good. What a wonderful smile you have. I love it when I can get a smile out of Megan. I love it when I can come around and see other people and see that interaction. I love people that are going the extra mile to make a difference. I can see the good in people now because I'm looking for it. I can see it because I've seen it in others, and it reminds me of others when I see it in you. Looking for the good in every brother or sister makes it easier for us to love them. Now, we're not all going to agree on every single aspect of our preferences, but we all agree on this. There's one God and we worship Him. He sent one Son to this earth and He died for you and for me. That Son didn't stay dead, but Jesus rose from the grave as a sign now that we have hope of eternal life. We go out into a lost and dark world and we take the gospel message, the message of hope and salvation, and we give it willingly to anybody that's willing to listen. And we, through our actions and attitudes, can have a tremendous influence on how they respond to it. If we are looking for the good in everyone we see, it will make it easier for us to love them. And if we love them more, guess what? We're going to find good things. Love your neighbor as yourself. How can I do that if I don't understand how to love them in the first place? All right. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 24, number 9. Consciously try to build up and increase the love and good works of yourself and others. We were here just this morning, weren't we? Let's go here. Verse 24, let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works. I love this passage, and you've heard me say this before. There are four main things there. Only one is in the negative, stated in the negative. He says, don't miss church. That's my translation. He says, don't forsake the assembling of ourselves together. But here's the three things that are good. He says, build up love. Build up or stir up love, stir up good works, and also exhort one another on a regular basis. Now, why is it important that we consciously try to build up and increase our love and good works of ourselves and of others? Why do we need to consciously do this? Well, because that's what we're told to do. The writer of Hebrews says, you need to do this. And all throughout the Bible, we find Jesus and the others telling us that we are to be kind, we're to love everyone, we're to be even especially kind to those who are not kind to us. And especially in the body of Christ, we need to encourage and build up each other. That's what we talked about this morning, was encouragement. So what about the conscious part? That last Sunday or so of last year, I said, I want you to find five people every time we come together. And you make it a point to go to some five people and you build them up. You encourage them in some way. Now, this morning we had 347 people here. That's a great number. Now, if only 100 of us did that and we reached out to five people, then that's 500 acts of encouragement that could have been out there to help build people up. Do you know what it would be like if you received just a portion of those 500 acts of encouragement? Can you imagine what it would be like if every time you came into your to your job at work, that there was a line of people there ready to build you up, pat you on the back and say, you can do it, and I've got faith in you to do a good job today? I tell you what, it would change your attitude and outlook on everything you did. I tell you something else. Not only the giving, but also the receiving of compliments and of edification, of building up, it's habit forming. It's habit forming. You will look for people to build up, especially when you see that they're a little down. You'll make the extra effort to find a way to build them up. And then once you do things and you start to get encouragement from others, you'll find that that's a pretty good feeling, and you're going to want that more and more. And those two things are great for the church because we need to build each other up. We need to be positive about these things. We've gone through 9 already, and here we go to number 10, and this is back over to Galatians chapter 6. So Galatians chapter 6, I've already quoted it once, but we'll come back to it in verse 1. Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Every church is going to have problems. We have problems here. Every church has problems. They're never totally going to go away because people are here. And as long as we have people, we'll always have people problems. We'll solve some, and then others will pop up. We'll solve them, and others will creep in. But you know what? All throughout this process, the Lord willing, if we do it all right, we are learning. We are growing. Like this morning's quote about, you know, failure is an opportunity to start again more intelligently. So if we try something and it doesn't work, we come back to the drawing board. We come back to the Bible. We see what we should be doing. We accomplish those things, and then we can help out. Now, Galatians 6. You know, it's easy to point out problems and flaws with other people. It really is. It's easy to mess up when you're up here as a preacher or when you're in a class teaching a class or when you're all on the job site. It's easy for people to see your flaws and to point them out. But it's so much better when they do so with the right spirit and they're also concerned with making a correction for you. You know, sometimes we make these flaws and, you know, it's kind of humorous. We do the wrong things, say things in the wrong ways. My dad years ago went to a PTA meeting, and he was a younger preacher, and he was new in the area. And 13 years later, when he left the area, they still remembered that speech he gave. Because he's quoting that Old Testament verse talking about, you know, the man having his children and like the quiver full of arrows. And he started talking about it. It's supposed to be fruit of the womb is his reward. Guess what dad said? Fruit of the loom. Yeah. Fruit of the loom is his reward. He got underwear out of it, right? Yeah. Well, listen, 13 years later, they remembered that, right? He couldn't live that down. Guess what? We're all going to make mistakes that could be devastating to some people. Other people can take it because it's corrected the right way, and they can laugh about that for a long, long time. Am I part of the solution or am I part of the problem when I see a problem there? Anybody can look over and say, hey, that lady's car is stalled. Let's honk our horn. But it takes a special kind of person to help solve the problem and help a person out of a fix. When I think about attitudes in the church, it's hard to quantify them to say, well, this is just the attitude of here or there, because attitudes permeate everything. And guess what, parents? Parents, listen. Children, don't listen right now, but parents, listen, okay? What you do and say at home about church matters, your kids know where you stand. Your kids hear. They see your body language, they hear the words that you use, and they know sometimes if you're hypocritical, what you say here at church doesn't always match up with what you say at home, and they start to take on those same characteristics. So we need to be careful that we're not just looking to see what the problems are, but that we're actively seeking to find solutions for the problem. Look at Galatians 6 and verse 1 again. Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are what? Spiritual. Restore such a one. We have an obligation. I want to be spiritual. I want everyone here to be spiritual. Of an occasion, we're in Matthew 7:1, that we don't have the beam in our eye, that we're already ready to help our brother with a speck in his eye. That's the spiritual person. That's who we need to be, every one of us. And if we back off and say, not my job because, you know, I'm a sinner too, you need to go back to the drawing board and find out how you should be spiritual. But you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of meekness. We need to be about having the attitude of finding solutions. We've already found the problems. We need to find solutions. And one of the solutions that we have is to this terrible, terrible, infectious and destructive thing called bad attitudes. We have a very effective vaccine, and that is the Bible. How do we overcome some poor attitudes that appear from time to time? We have to be coming back to the source. We have to be looking to the Bible and say, how is it that we should be treating one another? You see, there's nothing that we face now that God hasn't already thought about. There's no problem, there's no issue, there's no temptation, there's no squabble that God hasn't already seen that would happen, and He's got a solution somewhere in this book. And if we will focus on this book, if we will submit to what God's Word says, and if we will take on the attitudes that this book says we should have, I am convinced that we will have better attitudes throughout the church. There's been a song of encouragement that's selected for tonight. I know from time to time each of us need that moment where we can say to God, I'm so sorry for what I've done, and we make amends with God. There are other times in our lives that it goes beyond just our personal request to God. Other people are involved, or maybe we need the support of others to know, I need help in prayers so I can be right with God. We all make mistakes from time to time. We all need this. And so my prayer is that during this song and the time that will follow, that if you're not right with God tonight, that you'll take a moment to say that prayer and to make sure that you can have improved attitudes in your life. But if we can help you publicly through prayer, we're here for you. And also, if you'd like to take this time tonight to put on your Lord in baptism, we would love to see you become a new child of God as well. It's the Lord's invitation. Won't you come now while we stand and sing?